Today's daf in Masechet Ketuvot, brought to you from Eretz HaKodesh, is a daf Nun. A day of profound Bina, we shall hope. And we are holding about 16 lines down in the Omar Rav Yitzchak. So let us begin. We've been talking about the various takanot Usha, and we had the simanim yesterday for how to remember the three takanot Usha that were said over by Rabbi Loi, but there's many other reports of takanot and Usha. And today we'll continue with Rav Yitzchak. Omar Rav Yitzchak. Another takana in Usha, which has to do as well, I mean, there are many takanas in Usha, but which has to do as well with the idea of a father's responsibility for children. In this case, we're talking about the father's responsibility for limud haTorah with his children. So Amar of Yitzchak, there was a takana made in Usha, she'adam mitgalgelim b'no ad 12 shana, mikan ve'elach yoredim olach hayav. They made a takana that people have to have patience for their kids who don't want to learn. They're rebellious kids, they're not turned on by learning, and you can't get them to learn. So up until the age of 12, see, we've got smiling parents here. So up until the age of 12, you know, migalgelimo means, you know, let it roll, exactly as we would say, same lashon, let it roll, you know. Amazing that it becomes the same idiom. But once they've hit 12 and you haven't gotten anywhere with them, kill them. Yoredimo lechayav. At that point, kill them. Do what you got to do. As Rashi says, starve them out if you have to. It's pretty tough stuff here. Take the strap to them. Starve them out. Okay. After that, mikan ve'elech yoredim olachayav. Asks the Gemara, is this true? The Amar le'Rav, le'Rav Shmuel bar Shilat. Rav Shmuel bar Shilat, we've had a lot of Gemaras where we saw that he was an amazing and famous Rebbe of children, or of cheder children, so to speak, and it's a funny word to use for those times. But the idea of a Talmud Torah. So Rav said to him, do not accept kids less than 6 years old. It's not good for them to be in school, and you're not doing them any favors. Keep them out of school. Amazing, right? All these parents pushing their kids at the age of 3, you know, we got to make sure. No, he told them, don't accept them. Even got crazy parents that are pushing, refuse the kids' entry. But after that, once they've hit 6, you can accept them, barshit, kabil, visafi leketura, and stuff them like you would stuff a shor. Now, stuffing a shor, I mean, this is talking about a shor patam, where, you know, you force open his mouth, even though he doesn't want to eat, you just stuff it in, right? These are fattened shvarim. And it sounds like the same idea of the Yoredim Olachayav. No, says the Gemara, it's not the same thing. It's true. And yes, absolutely, Safi Leketura, stuff him as much as you can. But, I mean, you can't force it on him psychologically. You can keep putting the information into him and so on, but you don't fight him about it. That's something else. Miu eino Yoredim Olachayav ad v'yachash 12 shana. So it would mean that up until 12, even though you're stuffing him, but you aren't forcing him to learn when he doesn't want to. What you're doing is you're adding, let's say, more hours, more material, giving him a lot of tests, whatever. That, yes, kids can put up with that kind of pressure, but not pressure that is going to break their independence and spirit. Vibaitema, or it could be that there are two completely different dinim that we're talking about over here. We could be talking about, in one case, Mikra, and in the other case, Mishnah. So where it comes to Chumash, over there, you're talking about a little child. You can actually stuff him and keep up the pressure, even if it would be a Yerida L'Chayev. But when it comes to teaching Mishnah, that we don't do until 12 if there's resistance. The Omar Abaye, my mommy always told me, remember that his mommy wasn't really his mommy, it was his nanny. But anyway, she always said, Barshit Lemikra, that at 6, you can take him in for teaching Chumash or Tanakh, Bar Eser LeMishnah, this is not forcing. Bar Eser LeMishnah means you could start learning with them in school, Bar Eser. And I remember that the Mishnah in Avot talks about a Ben Chamesh LeMikra. The Ben Chamesh LeMikra is true. In other words, at the age of five, it is meaningful to learn Mikra, not Mishnah. Again, nobody pays any attention to the Mishnah, of course. What would the rabbis know about teaching Torah? But in any event, those old rabbis used to believe that they knew something. So what they said was that at the age of five, it's meaningful to teach Mikra. And at the age of 10, it's meaningful to teach Mishnah. But that doesn't mean that at the age of 10, you start putting on the pressure. It means you start. Same thing is true about the Mikra. You can start learning with children at five, but don't put them into school and don't stuff them. And then according to the first Lashon, at six, you can put them into school and you can stuff them with a lot of homework and so on, but you can't force them psychologically, according to the first Pshat, until they're 12. Then at 10, you can start learning with them meaningfully Mishnah, but you don't put on the pressure that would be perceived by them as violence, and I don't want to do this, they're making me do it, and so on, which is a lot different than I don't want homework. Obviously, there's a tremendous difference in terms of the psychological impact of the thing, and that we would, even though we started learning at 10, we only do the pressure at 12, according to the first Lashon. According to the second Lashon, it depends on the topic, so that Mikra is viewed bichlau as a kinder, gentler kind of limud, in which case the child anyway is not going to feel the encroachment upon his psyche and his independence, but by Mishnah, he will. So this is, again, very much open, obviously, to the realities of the time if you're going to be causing damage, not because... Listen, it's the zeitgeist that children buy into, and they measure themselves and the violence that is exerted against them to do things. They measure it in terms of what is acceptable levels of violence at the time. And you can't, their perception is going to be that you treated them with too much pressure. So that has to be taken into consideration. I mean, it's absolutely incredible when we compare the way the children were treated in school when I was a kid to the way children are treated in school today. I mean, it's just not to be believed. Like now the kids run the school, basically. Teachers, you can't hit a kid. You can't do anything. I mean, as I told you, like my memories of early grades in school where there was the European rabbi coming over with a big tack stuck through a ruler and holding your palm out and going whack.
You could hug a kid.
Yeah. That for sure. So anyway, things have changed. And again, these halachas are in terms of the way in which things ought to be, but not necessarily in terms of how they are. So when Abaya's nani said that Omra Abaya, bar shit lemikra, bar eser lemishnah, it's a little bit confusing because the bar shit lemikra is not like the Mishnah in Avos that talks about the Ben Chomesh Lemikra, and therefore it's Mash, but she's talking about when we would start teaching in school Mikra, not when we would teach him personally, which would be Chomesh, and you get him involved in reading and so on and so forth. And when it comes to Mishnah, again, when it says Bar Eser, it doesn't mean Bar Eser that will be already Molochayim and put on the pressure. It means that's when we should start teaching Mikra. And by the way, this idea of being 15 years old when you start learning Talmud also is totally ignored. Not a rabbi. If you could teach a 7-year-old today Talmud, it's amazing. They're going to be so ahead of the class. They don't understand a word of what they're talking about. That's the problem. That, remember, an inappropriate level of awareness will forever reduce the way that particular intellect is going to perceive what it's dealing with. It's very difficult to take everything that you learned and then restructure it when your mind is mature enough to handle it when you thought that you understood it as a child. It's always our biggest problem in terms of chinuch. So when the Mishnah is suggesting that a mind is immature and should not be exposed to Gemara, because it's easy to turn Gemara into a chess game in which, yeah, any five-year-old could play a chess game. Absolutely. Hmm. Is that better? Is the mic better now? I'm getting information from my angel. I have a guardian angel. Used to be that the guardian angels didn't show any form, and you were left with imagining what they look like. I don't get to actually see the guardian angel, but at least I see a remez to the tzura of what he could look like, you know, which is big darga. Okay. All right, so we've got a number of different benchmarks over here. The intellectual capacity, the capacity for pressure, and then the dangers of violating what the person himself wants in an educational setting. So fascinating issues in the Gemara, which is a tremendous amount of discussion in terms of the practical halacha. Omar Abaye, another thing, oops, we're in the middle of what his nani told him. The other thing is that there's ages that have to do with other issues, and only when a child is 13 is there a chiyuv of fasting on fast days, and that's fast days may 8 la 8, so it would be Nogea Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av, and for a girl, it would be 12. Now, Rashi learns, well, I mean, obviously, I understand, that has to do with the chiyuv d'oraisa when you're chayav in mitzvahs. I don't need a bias nanny to tell me basic halachas, do I? So he learns that as opposed to all of the other ages that are given here, in which the age means v'yom echad, whenever we say v'yom echad, what it means is that the child is six, not in the sixth year. But that's what all of these stages were. So Rashi says, however, we're forced to say that the age of 13, actually, he doesn't say 13 because his girsa did not have anything about boys. The whole thing was about the girls here. But his girsa was 12 for girls, which means in their 12th year. That is to say, a year before the bat mitzvah, they should already be fasting. Tosfos says, absolutely not. That's not the point. We're not going to suddenly switch from talking about the end of the year, just talking about within the year without any indication. So then Rashi's kasha is correct. Why do we need a bias nani to tell me something that I know midoraisa? The answer is, says Tosfos, that what a bias nani is coming to tell him is that she has a Kabbalah, that there was no chiyav of tanit sha'ot in the years before bar mitzvah or bat mitzvah. And you start fasting when you're fully fasting, and there's no din of partial fasting that is meant to be enforced. Fine, that is indeed a chiddush that she's telling him, which is very nogei l'halacha as well. Another thing, says Abaye, that if we're talking about six-year-olds, my nani told me something else, that omrali aim, hai bar shit the tarkali akrava biyumad mishlam shit. If it's on the last day of his sixth year and he gets stung by a scorpion, then he's in big trouble. Lo chaya. He's not going to live. Rashi learns this to mean he's not going to live, but he's not going to live unless you take drastic action. So he needs to be taken care of more than a person normally would from a scorpion bite. Maya Sutta, what can you do for him? Mararta de dayachivarta beshichra. You need to get some bile, some liver bile from a vulture, a white vulture. And you mix that with beer. And then you rub this over the bite, the shafye, vinishkaye, and you have him drink a little bit of this as well. Another thing she told me was that a bar shata, the tarik le zibura, b'yumad mishlam shata, an infant who is stung on the day of the last day of his first year, also is in major trouble. Maya Sutta, what can you do for him? Atzvata the Dikla B'maya, you take the sieve of the deca. Remember that, I think it's called basting in English, the material-like growth at the bottom of a palm tree. It looks as if it's actually been put into basting. which we wrap on some level. That's what we call what we wrap all plants with. You know, you bring them from the nursery and they're coming with ground in them. The tamar tree looks naturally as if it was wrapped. So you take some of that and you boil it up in water and you rub it across the sting and you've let him drink a little bit of it. Amar Rav Katina, kol machniset beno pachot miben sheish. If you do force your kid into school before he's 6 years old, then you're going to spend the rest of your life chasing him. Ratzach harav ve'eno magiyo. You're going to be constantly working on saving his health because he's going to be damaged by being in school. It's going to weaken him. He didn't have time to play around as a child, didn't do enough exercise. He's going to be sick for the rest of his life, and you're going to be running around getting vitamins and minerals and all types of programs to get him. You'll never catch him. You know, you'll never bring him back to normal. Keep a kid out of school before they kill him. That was one approach in Rav Katina. The other approach was, on the contrary, this kid is going to be so precocious that if he gets into school before six, the rest of the class are going to be spending the rest of their lives trying to catch up to this kid. That's what it means. Ratzi macharav ve'in magiinoto. They'll never catch up with him intellectually. And the truth is, it's both true. They'll never catch up with him intellectually, but the kid's going to spend half his life in the hospital. So I don't know what you want. You know, he's going to be both ahead intellectually and terribly behind in terms of his physical development. He'll just be chalish. He's going to be very weak, but Gomer, yeah, he's going to be way ahead in terms of what he knows. But some say that there's actually no really contradiction. We're not talking about the same case at all. All Rav Katina is pointing out is that the same words would apply to the same age depending on the particular development of that child. There are children that are chalish, and there's children that are bari. So you have kids that are just like built like tanks from the beginning and they can handle anything. And then you've got these little, you know, weakling kids, you know, the ones that are always going to be having to send into the Charles Adams courses in the comic books. I guess they don't have them anymore. So that they don't have to be embarrassed to go to the beach in the summer anymore, you know. And yeah, I see Richie is unfortunately sitting in a completely different milieu over there, but he's dreaming about those Charles Adams courses, and what we
Charles Atlas.
Atlas, sorry. Right. I knew something was wrong. The Adams stuff, unfortunately, is much more popular. thank you. Okay, one is talking about that kind of kid, and if he's like one of these very physical kids, he's in good shape. So then if he gets into school before he's six, then everyone is going to be trying to catch up with him intellectually. If he's a weak kid, then he's going to be sick. So moving on to our next takana of Usha, the fifth takana of Usha, Usha hitkinu ha'isha shemachra b'dichsei melug. So another big chiddush that we have over here is that if a woman sells her nichsei malug, now remember, she doesn't really have a right to sell her nichsei malug because the husband is given the rights to the production of the nichsei malug. So what she does is she says, look, I can't sell you currently the rights to the property because there's a lien on it for my rotten husband, but hopefully he'll drop dead very soon. And when he does, it'll be yours. So I'll sell it to you at a discount. You know, currently it's being used by my husband for a parking lot, whatever. I'll sell you the property. As soon as I manage to poison him, it'll be yours to keep. So she's got, so he buys it, let's say at a 50% discount, okay? And then what happens is that she dies. Often happens to the poisoners. So what's the halacha over there? So, bepashtas, what should be the din? Since she, and now remember, gentlemen, that this does have a connection to the overall machlokas about whether kinyan peres or kinyan aguf, as Tosis points out. Apparently, according to Rabbi Yochanan, our first take on this would be, according to Rabbi Yochanan, who holds that if someone owns the production of something, then he has an actual kinyan in the body of the thing, then in that case, there should be no need for the following takana. And it would work out only on Libet Reish Lakish. The Kinyan Peres is not Kinyan Aguf. But let's analyze what ought to happen before the takana Seusha. So that would mean that in terms of the Nichsei Malug, the moment that he dies, now the Nichsei Malug, as far as the Yarshim are considered to be, and the Yorish in this case is the Baal, a Yoresh obviously cannot go ahead and take away something that the Morish had sold in his lifetime. Now, in this case, the woman sold away, or Nichsei Malug, in her lifetime, and he wants to recoup those Nichsei Malug. We should be able to tell him, excuse me, sir, this was bought before your wife died, and therefore you never inherited it. So the Takana Enusha was that we give him, in the Nichsei Malug, we give him the rights of a buyer. And here, too, he's considered to be a lokeach. If he's a buyer, then what that means is that he had a lien from the time of the wedding on the inheritance of his wife, which came before the people who bought it, because she sold it after she was married. In which case, he could always be toreif miyad alekuchot. He can take away that property of the Nichsei Malug and get them out from under the hands of the buyers. So that was another takana in Usha. Baal motzi miyad alekuchot. So Ashkechei Rav Yitzchak bar Yosef l'Rabbi Abohu. Rabbi Yitzchak bar Yosef bumped into Rabbi Abohu, who was standing with a bunch of people in Barnea's neighborhood. This was all in Usha. And they're standing around with a lot of people who knew about the history of Usha and so on. So he said, Man Myra Deshmaitza to Usha, who is the one, the Chacham, that we're somech on to bring all of these various deis about what things happened in Usha and the takonas of Usha? So somebody said to him, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Abo said to him, it's Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina. So, Tonamine Arboim Zimnin, Vedomile Kamadaman Chalebekiste. He repeated that over 40 times, and it was as if it was in his pocket. Like we say nowadays, when something is clear to you, I got that in my pocket. So, there's a question among the Rishonim. Rashi understands that what he reviewed 40 times was the name of the Baal HaShmua, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, not what it was that Takanas Usha was, which anyway he would have chazered. But I mean, that would mean that one of the important things that we can learn from the sugya is how central it is to be aware of where a halacha comes from. We've spoken about this in terms of the idea of Kol Omer Dover B'Shem Omro, but there's something additional here, which is that the understanding of the way that the patterns of the Ma'amorim, of the Chachomim, come about in Torah is part of the etzem holistic structure of Torah, and therefore it's essential to know always who the Baal HaMaimer was, not only because it's good for the world in bringing Geula, which itself is profound in terms of the nature of the evolution of memes that is so interrelated with our genetic evolution, but because of the nature of Torah itself. Others argue on Rashi, and they say he wouldn't have done that Arbaim Zimnin. The Arbaim Zimnin was legabe the content of this Takanas Usha itself. This particular Takana, our fifth Takana we've discussed here, is the Takana of Abal Motzi Miyad HaLekuchot. Ashrei Shemrei Mishpat, Oset Tzedaka B'chol Eit. What exactly is the meaning of a pasuk that says that somebody can do tzedaka at all times? How in the world can a person do tzedaka at all times? There's so many other things that you're doing. V'chi efshar la'asot tzedaka b'chol eit? Can you really do that? That relates to our sugya. And it takes us back to Yavne, even though we've been talking about Usha. Dorshu Rabotenu should be Yavne. Some say it was Rabbi Eliezer. And this refers to Hazan Banav Uvnotav Kishahim Ktanim. It's talking about someone who is doing, even though he's not Mechuyev, after six to provide support. And we said that we can only put him into the public spotlight so he's embarrassed if he doesn't. And if he does, the idea is that he's essentially doing tzedakah because it's not a direct chiyuv that's enforceable in court. Rav Shmuel bar Nachmeni Omer, this is referring, you can't call that osa tzedakah b'chol eis. Why? Because if they're less than 6 years old, so then remember, he does have a chiyuv, which we haven't reached yet, but we're going to get to. And therefore, if we're talking about b'chol eight, it means across the board, this person will always be osik no matter what. And that's talking about someone who brings an orphan into the house, a yatom or yatoma. He brings them into his house, raises them, marries them off, masi'an. That is b'chol eight. A person like that is for all of the time. He's being Isaac in that tzedakah. Another pasuk that we need to address is Hon Va'osha Beveto V'tzidkato Omedet La'ad. It's a fascinating pasuk. The riches apparently were unaffected by the tzedakah, because what it's saying is he retains all of this hon, all of this wealth he's got in his house, and nonetheless the tzedakah that he did with this wealth is omedet la'ad. Now, where would that be that you do not eat into the hon va'osher by doing all of this tzedakah? So Rav Huna and Rav Chista argue. One of them says, this is talking about the hon of Torah. So somebody who has hon va'osher and he's spent a life of learning and he's also teaching, so then he has all of that hon va'osher and he retains all of that hon va'osher. And everything that he's taught is constantly growing among those to whom he taught it. And therefore, the tzidkato is omedet la'ad. That's an investment for eternity, and it hasn't taken anything at all away from him. On the contrary. So the hon va'osher is beveto. The other one said that this is also referring to somebody who's kotev, Torah, nevim, ktuvim, umashilan la'achirim. And the mefarshim bring that this is true of purchase. It doesn't have to be writing. Somebody who buys Sfarim and makes them available to other people. Remember that in those days, this was the greatest gift you could give someone. This was the same reason that Rachmana Litzlan, when Sfarim were burned and people had nothing to learn, it destroyed the entire community, destroyed all Yishuv in France. And the Yakrus, the way that people viewed access to like a Shas or to a Gemara, was like unbelievable. This happened during the Holocaust as well. The people would mamish sacrifice their lives to be able to carry around somehow or other and protect from the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, a piece of Gemara, or even if it was one Gilayon from a Shas. So somebody that does that and provides that for others, that's Tzidkato Omedet La'ad. And meanwhile, he has it, he still owns it himself and can read it when he wants to. What is this referring to? Omer of Yeshua ben Levi, once you have grandchildren, then Shalom al Yisrael. Because if you have grandchildren, you're not going to get into issues of Chalitza and Yibum. Chalitza and Yibum are not peaceful kinds of things to be involved in, because sometimes she doesn't want Yibum, he'll force Yibum. Or if there's a chalitza, it's embarrassing, and she spits at him and so on. That's not Shalom al Yisrael. And therefore, once you know that the next generation has successfully reproduced, so then your children are not going to be in a matzav of facing chalitza and Yibum. Rib Shmuel bar Nachmini Omer, Kivan Shabanim Levanecha, Shalom al Dayanei Yisrael. Look, once you've got your kids have kids, so then there's going to be much less children died without children. Then there's going to be all kinds of family fights. Who is the right heir and how much does he get and how does it? If there's a normal Yerusha and your children have their own children and so on, then you're in much better shape than in getting into probating wills and the halachas that are so involved. That's how Rashi learns. Tosfos says, what halachas are so involved? There's no halachas as straightforward as the dinim of Yerusha. So why would there be problems in court? Zemidrash darash rebelozer lefnei hachamim. Okay, the next thing we had was the beautiful way that we were derish, the lashon of the ksuv. And this was the chibur of the dinim of ktuvas benin dichrin with the ksuva of benot nukvan. That was our diuk. And what he said was, Rabbi Elazar said, in the same way that it says in the ksuva that the benin dichrin inherit all of the things that their mother brought in over and above the Yerusha that they share with the other children from this father. And then the other Tanai of Benot Nukvan is that my daughters from you shall be maintained from the estate until they get married. And Rebbe Elazar said that we'll make a hekesh between the dinim of the ketuvah. That just like Benin Dichrin, by definition, is a din in Yerusha only after death, obviously. There wouldn't be any din that it would have any impact on Benin Dichrin while the parents are alive. So Yazir Rav Yosef Amida Rav Amnuna, V'yazir Rav Amnuna V'ka Omar. Another thing that Rav Amnuna was pointing out was that these two things are also interrelated in another way. Because Kishim She'ina Banim Yorshim, Ela Min HaKarka, Kach Ein HaBanot Nizonot, Ela Min HaKarka. So it says in the Mishnah that the Halacha is Ksuvas Benin Dichrin, and they also, even so, they have the chiyuv for benot nukvan, meaning that they need to be mevater on their money. Like we said, that the boys could go bang on doors and try to get money to live on, but the girls come first, and this goes on until such time, either that they grow up, their bogrot, or until they marry. So now the question is, can they collect from metaltali? And since boys are only Yoresh property, so too the girls can only collect from real estate, not from bank accounts. So kach ina banot nizonot, ela min hakarka, at which point the entire Beis HaMedrash exploded. Boo! What? Yeah, it's insane. Whoever heard of such thing? What do you mean? Boys only inherit real estate? That's the craziest thing we ever heard. Ava shalei kulei alma, the whole Beis HaMedrash starts yelling at him. What does that mean? You're telling me only a man that left behind real estate, that's the only one that has any inheritance for his children? And if he didn't leave any property, so then his sons don't inherit him? Whoever heard of such a thing? You're nuts. What's going on? Anyway, so Rabbi Yosef said to Rabbi Amnuna, maybe I can help clarify the situation over here. Maybe what you're referring to when you say in the same way that the boys don't inherit, you're talking about k'tuvat b'nin dichrin ka'amar mar. What you're saying is that the special rights that the children of this woman have to the things that were brought from her family into the marriage, that's what b'nin dichrin is all about. So those special rights are a reference to real estate, right? As we're going to see later on. Now, when we talk about real estate, I need to, Gavi's not here, Moshe's not here, somebody in touch, Gershi's not here, this is crazy. Okay, let me just write it down myself so I'll remember to tell them that we should keep a record of it. So the halakha is like this. In the event that you have two groups or more of children, each one of these children come from a different woman. Each one of these women was given a ksuva of benin dichrin. So now the question is, gentlemen, Rav Barnea, would be nice to have your concentration for a moment rather than thinking up how to attack me next. So... what happens if we split all of the ketuvot benin dikrin? So everybody in the family is going to get the ketuvah that was from their particular mother. Now, what's interesting is, even if all of the money was exactly the same, let's say they all the mothers brought in exactly the same amount into the marriage, it will still make a major difference if we activate the ketuvat benin dichrin. How? Well, let's imagine the situation. One mother had four sons, another mother had one son, and yet another mother had three sons. Each one of those familial groups is going to be getting a different amount prorated from the mother's ketuvah. Whereas if we had just lumped everything together and the ketuvah would have been directly from the father, then the din would have been that they all got exactly the same, obviously, right? So the ketuvat benin dichrin has a lot of implications, not only what particular things they're going to be getting, but how those things are going to be split. So over here, we've got all these three family groups are suing, and they want to get the ones that are particular to them, or the one that stands to gain the most are suing, and they want to get what's particular to them. So the halacha, of course, is normally that you will activate that the benin dichrin, the avin l'chiminoi, inun yartin kesef ketuvatech, yeter al shan l'chasim, and so on. And there's no reason why not, unless... Now, this is the concept that we need to remember. It's the concept that's called motar dinar. Motar dinar means there needs to be a real inheritance, midiraisa, that will be left after we split all of the property according to benin dichrin. But suppose if we give everyone what their mothers had brought in, there's not even one dinar worth of additional property that is going to be split equally between the man's heirs, then it would turn out that the ketuvat benin dichrin canceled the Yerusha D'oraita. That we don't do. So the Rabbanan never instituted a benin dichrin in the event that there wasn't at least a dollar's worth of things that were going to be split equally between all of the brothers. And therefore, if there isn't a motar dinar, then they're cholkin b'shava, and they do not get the benin dichrin. So the halacha over there is that this din that we split it is only if we have real estate that is available. Let's say there's $1 million in bonds that's going to be split among the Yoshim. That does not satisfy the requirement of motar dinar. There needs to be real property in order for us to be able to activate the ksuva benin dichrin. So therefore, what Rabbi Yosef said to Rav Amnuna was, that must be what you mean. You're making a hekesh between benin dichrin and benot nukpan. So what you're saying is that in the same way that we're talking about benin dichrin, that only applies when there's a yerusha of real property, so that there has to be karkot. The same thing is true, that the banot do not get their mizonot unless there is property and not metaltim. Is that what you meant? Omar Lezer of Amnuna said to Rabbi Yosef, you know, this entire Beis HaMedrash is full of idiots. You happen to be the only intelligent person here. So it's nice to know that at least there's one intelligent person here. You know, Samar de Gavar Rabu Yadamai Kamina. You are a big Talmud Chacham. You understand what I'm saying. Everybody else, of course, jumps to the conclusion that I'm the idiot. And that's why everybody's yelling at me. Of course, that's what I mean. Omarle, Mar de Gavar Rabu Yadamai Kamina. Omar Pchir Bar Yosef. I could tell you that Rav was once Zan Mechitei da Aliyah. He supported these women. These were girls, young girls, and they were left without their father. They went and they demanded their money. I'm not sure what that money was, because it could be money to get married, which is called Parnasa, or it could be monies of support, which is the Mizonot. So what was it? we're not really clear, but it says over here that he gave them metaltoi. I mean, wheat in the aliyah, that's things that are not connected to the ground. They're in the storage of a silo, and he provided it for them. So, again, this is very much not like what Rav Amnuna just said. So, Iboilo, what did he mean when it said that he gave it? When it was for what? He gave them parnasa, and it was for their marriage, essentially? Is that the case? That's not in the Ksuva, as we'll see. And that actually can be collected from Metaltoi. Umay Aliyah. And if we're talking about Parnassa, then the concept of Aliyah is a very different terminology, which we have found in Shmuel. The meaning of Aliyah is Mi'iluya de'av, ukedi Shmuel. Iluya means, how high do you think the dad was willing to go to get his daughters into the kind of marriage that he wanted? Now, that's an estimation. So the halacha is that the din of marrying them off is not included in the ketuvah. It's an estimation that we make of the niftar. So it's sort of Bezdin will do the ratzon of the mate. So in the same way that if he had left us a request, please make sure that my daughters get such and such for their wedding, we would do that. We also estimate what a father would like to give, what this father, not a father, and we ask people who know him and knew his personality and how willing he was to let some of his money out. Was he a stingy guy or was he a broad guy? Whatever it is, that's what it means. The Omar Shmuel leParnasa. When it comes, remember the word parnasa in the context of the ketuvah for banot is what is needed to get them married. So leparnasa shemin ba'av, how generous is the father? So that would be iluya de'av. Or it may be that he actually, it says Rav Zan, that sounds like he was giving them food. So maybe that's what it means. Odilma mizone mamishave, umay aliyah, midvarim tovim shenemru ba'aliyah. It means not the aliyah that it was telling us. What do I care where it was? There was a meeting in an attic in which they came up with certain takonas, and that was called the aliyah. We find that in various places in Shas where there were special meetings. That's what saved the Megillah of Kohelet for us. And so on. So there are a lot of things that were not public meetings, but that there were takonas. And this was one of the good things, bidvarim tovim, that were brought up in the meaning of the chachomim in the aliyah. The omer of Yitzchak bar Yosef, ba aliyah hitkinu, sheyehe banot nizonot min hametaltalim. That actually, up there in that aliyah, they changed the halacha. And even though it's true that Rav Amnuna points out that from the Diyak and the Ksuva, the halacha of Parnas, not Parnas, of Zan, Mizonos for the Bonais, should be only from Karkaot, they were metakein in that aliyah, that even from Metaltoi. So which one is it? Tashma? It happens to be that bidei the rabbi banoi achid reb chiya bar abba have a metaltum in the yasme. So Rabbi Banoi was an appointed apotropos, and he was holding metaltum that belonged to yitomim, and the girls sued in Shmuel's bezdin, or to lekami de Shmuel, that they wanted to get this metaltum to provide for them. So Shmuel said, go right ahead. And he said to Rabbanoi, Zilzon, go and provide them their groceries from that money. Well, sounds like groceries. Like Rabbi Yitzchak bar Yosef, Sfirale, apparently that what we did in the Aliyah was we changed the halacha and we will buy groceries from a bank account or from Metaltelin. Not necessarily. Lo, maybe it means the Parnassah. And this would be Shmuel. Shmuel's own shita is that leparnasa shamin ba'av. So if we need to estimate what it was that the father would be giving to his daughter if he were alive, then obviously that has nothing to do with the standard limitations of collecting a ksuva, which over there indeed is karkaot. But why would that apply here? This is a completely different takana. It has nothing to do with that. And because of that, maybe that's why Shmuel said that give them the money or give them the chitim, because this has nothing to do with the ksuva. Now, there was a maisa like this in Narda, and the Dayanim in Narda, they paskined the same thing, that you could give the girls their groceries from taking even metaltalin and money. In Pumbedisa, there was such a maisa, and Reb Chana Bar Bizna also paskined, give the metaltalin to the girls. Reb Nachman heard about this, and he warned the Dayanim of Narda, and he warned Reb Chana Bar Bizna, either you go and you reverse the court's decisions, and if not, I'm going to pay them back, and I am going to take your house away, your homes away, and sell them in order to cover what it is that you took for the mizonos that you had no right to take. How is this? So the Chazon Ish says that Lamaisa Reb Nachman was empowered. He was the Rav, really, of these people. And because of that, he actually had the kayach to do that. And if it would have been in a place where he wasn't accepted as the Mora d'Asra, even though it's in Eretz Yisrael and so on, then he wouldn't have been able to do this. Because what this required was his determination that this was called a Teya Bidvar Mishnah. Because the only way you can reverse a Psak Halacha that's already been given is if it was a ta'ut bidvar mishnah. And if you don't, these talmidim, then you're going to pay. But the Torah bidvar mishnah, obviously, if somebody disagrees with Reb Nachman and says, no, this is the halacha, so then he couldn't have forced them to do that. Now, lemaisa, just you should know that there have been tremendous changes in these halachas over the period of time after the time of the Gemara, and that was that there was a takanas haga'inim, that nowadays a woman collects a ksuva and the girls collect mizonos even from metaltalin. Tosfos writes that that applies to the parnasa as well, not just to the ksuva. But Pashtus, the takon of the Gaoni, was a ksuva. And as I mentioned to you earlier, that as the political situation changed and Jews were oftentimes barred from owning real estate, that there was no choice but to change the fundamental dinim of a collection. There's another question, a fascinating question, how far this would go. Would it even be that after the takon of the ga'inim, that you can collect for the mizonos habonais, even from a matana that the father gave on his deathbed as a matna shchiv mirah, and that they would have a right to be gova from even that? There are more paskins that we don't, but lemaisa, it's a big shaila. Rav Chacham Ben Siona Bashol has a big tshuva on this issue. Furthermore, there's a machlokes halacha lemaisa about benin dichrin. Does the takonas hagaonim about the mosar dinner apply now even to metaltalin mosar dinner so that we will activate benin dichrin? Or since lemaisa, we're going to see later on that the benin dichrin element no longer has such application, so that we'll talk about the day after tomorrow. Because of that, maybe there would be no change, or maybe because of the fact that anything that would affect Yerusha Diaraita, they would have been more machbaran. Okay, that is still true. Anyway, back to the sugya. Revi Ami v'Reb Asi, Sarva L'meizan mi'metaltalin. So they wanted to do this, and they wanted also to collect for the girls' groceries from metaltalin. So Rav Yaakov Bar Idi said, you know, this is a milta, the Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish lo avdi ba uvda. We never saw that even Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish, who had an awful lot of broad shoulders and being willing to do things that look like they're against the halacha, they never did this. And you're going to take it upon yourself, aton avdim ba uvda? I mean, they discussed it. There's no record of its ever having been actualized. And you're going to go ahead and do it? Rabbi Elazar also was thinking of collecting for bunnies from Metaltalim. So Rabbi Shimon ben Eliakim said to him, Rebbe, Yodei ani b'char she'ein midas hadin ata oseh lo midas rachmanut. I know that obviously you weren't going to actually force it, because you know that that's not the halacha after you saw Rabbi Nachman and so on. But what you're trying to do is you're going to scare the guy. You're going to embarrass the guy. And he's going to think that the court's going to come up with a decision against him, which is often done in court. You know, like the judge will give an indication that unless you settle out of court, you know, you may be in very big trouble. Whatever. So basically, that's what was happening over here. I know that you don't plan to actually do it. The problem is that everyone who sees that in the end, the guy pays these male heirs, they end up paying for their sisters from Metaltalim, they'll think that you were paskening that's the halacha. So Shema Yiru HaTalmidim V'Yigbu HaLacha L'Dorot. You have to be very careful to make it clear what's going on. And there was another miser when a girl who had lost her father came to Rabbi Yosef's Beis Din, and he told the boys, give these girls from the dates that are on the budya. Now, the budya are the mats that are holding the dates that fall, which means that it's metaltalin. Omar le Abaye, how are we giving her metaltalin? I don't understand. Suppose this was a balchov. It's a real balchov that the father owed money to. Can you collect from the Yesomim's money to pay a balchov? Of course not. The only way you could pay a balchov is if there's a lien against property. Dates on a budya? You wouldn't be able to collect from Kol Shekein to force them to give to their sisters. So ki hai gavna mi havi mar Rebbe, would you have given it in that case? Omar Le, Rav Yosef said, you don't understand what I'm saying. I'm not saying give them the actual tamarim on the budyot. I was saying give them the dates that are going to be falling on the budyot. They're currently connected to the tree still, so they have a din of property. When you see that they're hanging down, they're about to fall into the budya, and that is what you should give them. And therefore, technically speaking, they have halacha of mechuber lekarka, and therefore you can collect from them, and they are the things that are most roy currently to give them to eat. I mean, the reason that you're giving them specifically this, you're saying they're about to fall off, but the halach is that anything that's about to fall off is considered to already be gazuz. No, says Rabbi Yosef, obviously, you're supposed to use your brains over here. I'm talking about the currently, they would not be actually falling off in the sense that they wouldn't gain from remaining on the tree. I mean that you might be ready to pick them. That's the pshat. They're ready for the budyot, because then you spread the budyot on the ground and you start picking them and throwing them down. That's what I'm talking about. But that doesn't mean that they would not be better off being left on the tree for a while to fully ripen. But sometimes people, like we had in the Gemara of Chagiga, sometimes people look for the fruit that are less ripe in order that you should be able to package them. They survive longer. You're going on a trip, and so you don't want them to rot. So that's what I'm talking about. They still are going to benefit from being connected to the ground. There was another maisa of a yatom and yatoma that came to Rava. And these were two kids, and there were an apotropos that was in charge of the money for the kids. And Rava said the thing to do over here, he told the apotropos, what you should do over here is we can't provide from Metaltalim. We cannot provide for the girl. But what we can do is we can give enough money to the boy that he should be able to feed his sister with it. Amr the Rabban al Rava, I don't understand. But you were the one who paskin. I mean, what's the point of a trick? You were the one who paskin that we only collect from karka, not from metaltale. And you said that that's true whether we're talking about mizone, or you're talking about the din of the ksuva, or you're talking about the din of parnasa, which is mashma that he doesn't agree with what Shmuel said before, that it does not go with Iluya La'av. Okay, that's a discussion here in Taisvis. Why are you telling us a trick? He's not supposed to be using his money for her. Omar Luhu, so Rava said to them, because use your brains. Ilo Rad Sarshiv Chalasham, let me ask you something. This boy, let's say, would need somebody to clean the house. I mean, he doesn't have parents. So he would need somebody to clean the house, okay? So would the court assign money for hiring a shiksa to clean the house? So fine, so give that money to his sister. His sister will clean the house. And meanwhile, you're giving her a parnasa. What's wrong with you guys? Over here you have also the fact that you're giving the banas, and you're providing him with a house cleaner. I just wanted to finish the Mishnah, if it's okay with you. So whether we have real estate, or we have only metaltalim, motziin lemezoni shat lebanot, divrei Rebbe. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar omer, only nechasim sheyesh lemachrayut, which is real estate, over there we will take for the banot out of the banim. We will take for banot from other banot. In the event that there were only girls that are the heirs, and the older ones collect, and over there they were relying on the fact that the estate is going to pay for their little sisters until they grow up and until they're married, that's not true. In an event that there are only female heirs, then they all share equally. There's no such thing as a takana of benot nukvan when all of the heirs are banot, because they're all the same. So we will take away everything from those older girls that inherited things. We will put the property together and split it evenly, whatever it is, however it comes out. So we'll take it away from them and do it right. We'll take away for banot, mina banot, and we'll take away banim, mina banim. Same thing is true if older kids take too much for themselves. We'll force a re-examination of the thing. We don't let people get away with stuff where ktani may be injured. And lebanim mina banot minechasim merubim, if we have enough to go around. Remember, we had minechasim muatim and nechasim merubim. We will also take away from the daughters, if they took too much money away from the boys because there was enough to support them until their weddings or until bogrot. But we will not take away property to the boys, binachasim muatim, because as we said before, over there, the girls are the only ones who get until their wedding, and the boys could go banging on doors to try to collect it. Nechasim she'en lehem achrayut, that's about nechasim yesh lehem achrayut. As far as metaltamin are concerned, motziim abanim in abanim, ulabanot min abanot, ulabanim in abanot, the deal is that over there, the girls didn't have rights to the metaltalin to take away from the boys. But in the terms of one set of kids who took too much and so on, they're all the same. But we will not take away the metaltalim for the girls away from the boys in order to provide the parnasa for them. Afa gav the kaimelan aloha karebi michavero. So even though normally the din is that we paskin like Rebbe, which is that we should use both metaltalim and the actual real estate, the din is that halacha Rebbe Shimon ben Elazar, the din is not like Rebbe, and we go like Rebbe Shimon ben Elazar, says we do not take away metaltalim from the boys. Why? Because Rava has already paskin, the din is the ksuva, and all the tana'e haktuva is only built around karka, not on metaltalim, whether we're talking about ketuvah, whether we're talking about mizonot, whether we're talking about parnasa, it's all the same, except for the fact that it is not anymore, as I mentioned to you earlier, because of the takanas hagaonim. But this takanas hagaonim was much later and was near the time of the rishonim, at the end of the period of the gaonim, and therefore all of these halachas have changed because of political circumstances and new takanas.